Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. This is Rob May, and you're listening to CMC Radio. Joining me today is Neil Golden. Neil, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Rob, and I hope you are too.
Doing very well, thank you. So for everyone just joining us, we've had Neil on for a bunch of different episodes now, and Neil is a stock chart reader based out of California. And Neil, I mean, who better to tell us a little bit about what stock chart reading is than the man himself? So why don't you share that with us?
Basically what I do instead of looking at earnings reports of corporations is I go to their charts on the stock, and I look at how they've been moving in the past, and off of past movement, I try to predict their future movement based on a couple of chart patterns that I'm familiar with, and I know they have a very high percentage of wins following
right.
these patterns.
Absolutely. And now, Neil, at the beginning of every show, you do you do give everybody a little bit of a warning about the market and investing. So why don't you give us a little bit about that, too?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that because that completely skipped my mind. I want to throw out a disclaimer that investing in stocks is totally an art. It is not a science. Just because something has happened in the future, I mean in the past, there's no guarantee that it will happen in the future. And never invest with money you cannot afford to lose.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people do that.
Well, that's very evident. They were saying part of the reason China was having problems is that a lot of new investors were putting their life savings in it all at once, and the market was going south, so they had to sell to, they couldn't sell, and they lost all of their earnings. So it can be very painful.
Absolutely. And I do want to bring up, before we get into today's main topic, which is opening range, you saw obviously what happened in the market this past week. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have to agree with most people. It was overdue, a correction. They were saying it hadn't happened in the last 6 years. The market has been going up, and basically, you know, it seemed to be all centered around China in the sense that you can't believe what you're hearing about China, about their growth rates, which they said has been between 7% and 8% per year, but it's grown so rapidly, so fast, that now it has to start growing at a slower pace. It's like the American economy. It's very huge. You know, there's a couple of $1 trillion involved.
Right.
And the growth rate is, you know, 1% if we're lucky.
And Neil, I got to ask, because obviously we're coming up, you know, on an election year, and with all the different candidates coming out and saying different things, what do you take as far as how this would affect, or how do election years affect the stock market?
Oh, well, it's like every election, ever since President Clinton and before, it all centers around, if you ask me, jobs. There's only one clear thing that I've heard so far, and that has come from Bernie Sanders, and he says something to the effect that Social Security is only taxed on the first $120,000 a person makes.
Right.
But if people were taxed, you know, people who make $2 million a year or $20 million a year, if everybody was taxed on their total income for Social Security, Social Security would not have any problems in the future. When I heard that, I said, wow, you know, where is this guy going? But that's just my, you know, political bent on it. So I know everyone doesn't agree with that. But, you know, I happen to be in the generation of baby boomers that are, you know, more or less somewhat retired. And Social Security plays a very important part of it, and I don't want to see it to go broke, and I want it there for, you know, future generations if they need it.
Sure, absolutely. I think that's scary to a lot of people in the baby boomer era there, definitely.
Yeah, and it has to do with taxation on their income or total income, and a lot of people who don't need it, you know, are getting Social Security, but the people who really need it aren't getting it, you know. Like, I'm sure you're familiar with the statistic that roughly 10% of the American population, you know, controls 90% of the assets. So
right.
Right. So there's a lot of us who, quote, are in poverty, which is basically what this show is somewhat about, is trying to educate people on how to make wise decisions when it comes to investing.
Sure, absolutely. And I think, I mean, is it safe to say when you hear of people that come into a little bit of money, they tend to make the wrong decision initially when they jump into the stock market?
Yes, they do. It applies to all fields of entry. You know, as we know, recently I was watching television and they had this guy on, and he was talking about sports figures who are, you know, basically entertainers. But he said after the sports people play sports like baseball, football, you know, in basketball, he was saying that 98% of them end up broke. They think, you know, at an early age of, you know, 20 years old, leaving college or being drafted by, you know, a big league team, that the money will last forever, and they never plan on it ever ending. So they're just spending it with the assumption that they'll make more, and then they get injured, you know, and they're... and they're no longer playing professional sports, and they end up broke. But that applies to sports figures. It applies to a lot of people in the sense that even in the stock industry, you know, 90% of the money who people who 90% of the people who make first-time investments end up losing money because they buy at the wrong time, you know. And what you have to know is, you know, when a pullback is happening and when the pullback is over with to invest if you want to, you know, come out ahead. So like I said, it's all about making wise investments decisions that I'm doing this show.
Now, typically for people, and I know I love getting your perspective on this, if you know, in terms of having a financial planner or a financial advisor, are there pros and cons that you would warn people about?
Like I said before, you know, can you trust your banker? Can you trust your stockbroker?
Mm-hmm.
No, but do you have the time to educate yourself in these matters? And the answer is probably not. It takes, you
right.
know, it's not something you can do in a short period of time. But I think, you know, if you're going to be responsible, you have to, you know, learn how to take responsibility. You know, it's not that the market is working against you, but if you take responsibility for your decisions and stand by them, that requires a lifelong commitment, I feel, to learning about what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Sure. Absolutely.
But you can, you know, definitely ask your broker or planner, you know, about how you should get started. But that's just one step in taking it further.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure that with having a financial planner or advisor, you know, there's definitely the question of where is the money going? You know, should I trust a certain stock or investment that they're going to make for me, and whose interests are they really looking out for?
Yeah, it's not only that, but in America society, I feel that we're hit by advertisement continuously, day in and day out, which says, you know, the thing idea of keeping up with the Joneses and buy, go in debt, and people aren't really encouraged to save, but that's the part that's really important. You have to learn how to save your money from an early at the early stages of your work career.
Sure.
And keep on building on that. Recently, I heard a statistic, at least pertaining to high-tech companies, at most an employee will stay with a company for 5 years at most, but the average time is only 3 years. So if you're going to be working for, you know, 30 years or whatever, trying to pay off your student loans and buy a house and send your kids to college, changing jobs every 3 years can be a hardship.
Sure. It's certainly an uphill battle. I would say that for anyone entering the workforce now, and even, you know, that have been in it for a while, it's certainly an uphill battle once you throw in the mix a couple of student loans and a mortgage, like you said, and, you know, it's a lot, definitely a lot these days.
Right, and the consequences is when people are reaching the age of 70, well, they're still working. They're living longer, but they're working longer also.
Absolutely, so definitely.
Right.
So for today, Neil, I know that a big topic you wanted to focus on was the opening range. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, before I actually get into that, I just would like to recap a few things I've said in previous shows.
Sure.
About the type of investors there are. There are what they call the long-term investors, the ones that, quote, buy today and they tend to hold the stock forever. And in past shows, I'm trying to say that the concept of buy and hold is now sort of dead because of rapid advancements in technology. It has a dramatic effect on the society at whole. And recently I'm told that this is 2015, and by 2017, things are going to be radically different. You know, we're
right.
already
yeah.
familiar with electric cars, but there may be even driverless cars on the road, you know, real soon. So, you know, how much will they cost, and, you know, how are we going to adjust, and will the average person be able to buy one? You know, those are all questions that are looming in our future.
Mm-hmm.
So, based on that, like I was saying, the concept of buy and hold forever is now dead. Although I'm more or less making it up. Another type of investor would be the short-term investor, and those
okay.
would be people who, like myself, would see an opportunity. Best, and maybe it would last for 3 or 4 days, and after that they're out of their position and moving on to the next possibility. So between the long term and the short term, and then they have what they call day traders who only go in on a daily basis, see an opportunity, and sometimes this opportunity may be there for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then they're out.
Right.
But when they do this, they're like throwing, you know, a couple of $1 million in the market. And when they sit there, they see their profit, and they're out. They do not hold it overnight at all. Of course, I can't be in that group, but I may get in for a few days at a time.
Sure.
So when I looked at investors, you know, I said to myself, investing, I said, well, long-term, that takes too long.
Mm-hmm.
And short-term, or swing trading, you know, I may be interested in, but I convinced myself that I never wanted to be a day trader. The best long-term trader, as we all know, without any doubt, that's alive today would be Warren Buffett. But have you ever heard of a famous short-term trader? The answer is no. You know, George Soros might be there, but for the most part, there's not anyone out there that's really, really, you know, famous, and there's not a lot of them. You just don't
right.
hear about them because they sort of burn and crash after a while. And long-term traders, of course, do a lot better and become a lot more famous.
Mm-hmm.
So this concept that I ran across at one point, it had to do with day trading. And I said, well, maybe I'll you know, look into day trading to see what I can learn. And maybe it'll help me out. And sure enough, it did, although I'm not a day trader at all. And it concerns the concept of opening range. The definition of an opening range is that it's created in the first 30 minutes that a market is open.
Okay.
And what it does is it creates a high and it creates a low within these 30 minutes. And the reason why this is important is because whenever you buy, you always want to buy at a low point. You know,
sure.
I've heard of the saying, buy low and sell high.
Yes.
So on the opening range after the first 30 minutes, let's give an example. Maybe it opens at $10 and it goes to $15 within this period of time. And then it just, after that, let's say if it goes higher than the $15 after the 30 minutes, well, the assumption is that the bulls are in charge and it's going to be an up day, theoretically. It doesn't have
right.
to be. But if it's a down day, it'll start trading below the $10, and that indicates that the bears are in charge and the market is selling off. Typically, in a strong trending market, what a stock will do is in the morning, if it's going up, it will sell off, and then it will end up the day at a higher price. And if it's declining, what it'll do is it'll go higher in the morning, and then it will sell off by the closing price
mm-hmm.
and end up down for the day. But the rule for this opening range is that for a strongly trending stock, it will never trade below the prior day's low. And if it's going up and it does hit the prior day's low, well, that's where you set your stop at to get out of the stock, because this is an indication that either the trend is over, the stock is becoming choppy,
right.
and the stock may be starting to reverse. So it's just a psychological concept, the opening
sure.
range. But I find, you know, it comes from day trading, but I find it very useful in trading markets to determine whether or not they're breaking out or reversing.
Now, does it helps then long-term and short-term aside from just day traders then?
Yeah, it's applicable on all time frames and
mm-hmm.
in all events that if you have this concept, it doesn't really mean that just because the stock is higher or lower, you know, for the day, you know, you can't really predict that 100% of the time, but maybe about 5%, you know, the stock will not, 50% of the time, the stock will not change directions that before it's established. But what it does help you with, because just this week, the market was pretty wild and it was pretty volatile, and they said that it went down 6 days straight.
mm-hmm.
Well, after the sixth day, there was a very familiar chart pattern, somewhat, you know, it's called maybe a butterfly pattern or something like that. And if you recognize the problem, you would have known that on Wednesday that the market was likely to start going up again. So another problem that I've had in chart reading is these day trading charts are a little bit harder to read. You know, me personally, I use bar charts. Those charts have open, they have a high, they have a close,
Mm-hmm.
And they have a low. There's four things there, you know, open, high, low, and close.
Okay.
But on intraday charts, they start like at 9:30 in the morning, you know, Eastern Standard Time, and they're
right.
more horizontal in nature. They're not really vertical like mm-hmm. the bar charts are. And they go through the different hours of the day, you know, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12, you know, to the market close. And it took me a long time to figure out how to read those charts because, like I said, they're more horizontal in nature than they are vertical. And the whole thing about trading is that you're usually using two time frames. you're deciding to try to trade off of the higher time frame, and you're using the lower time frame to gauge where the low point is or to observe the low point and watch how the market reacts after it hits that point. In which direction, if it's going up, you know, it should go, and that's what you want to do, sort of time it. So like I said, the whole point was to buy low and sell high.
Of course.
So, that's why they use two time frames, one to decide if the market is ready to go in a new direction, and then the other one is to time it so that you buy it at a low point. And you put it together, but like I said, it takes practice and patience, and you have to be observant. But this past week, you know, like I said, they were blaming all the volatility on problems that China was having, and the market just,
right.
like I said, sank for 6 days in a row.
Yep.
But at the sixth day, if you had looked at your intraday chart, you would have seen that the market was not going lower on Wednesday, and you would have been prepared to go long. How long it's going to go long, I don't know. They say, you know, the market's likely to be volatile for the rest of the year, which I more or less agree with because I don't see, like I said before, international or multinational corporations making much of a profit. So
mm-hmm.
they're saying people have to adjust their positions.
Sure.
Sure.
And now, as we've discussed, this is, though, a good time for people to invest, right, with the holidays coming up eventually?
Theoretically, starting in the month of October is
mm-hmm.
One of the best times to invest statistically. It should be.
Right.
But, I mean, things have, you know, drastically changed. Before, you know, there used to be brick and mortar and retail stores, but you know, everything now is done online. So I don't know how to gauge, you know, the sales of brick and mortar. I don't know, you know, and I don't, you know, in a sense, yeah, it could be. If I were to make a recommendation, you know, transportation companies will do well, like railroads,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe FedEx and UPS, you know, those industries may do well. And they're saying now plane fares are really dropping drastically, and
yes.
airlines are trying to attract travelers, so people are traveling a lot within the country, you know, so
mm-hmm.
Transportation stocks, if they recover. I would more or less base my tendency, you know, right now, as of today, I would say, you know, hold on to your money
mm-hmm.
because the market could be going lower. That was the general consensus that most people were feeling. And
mm-hmm.
if that is to really happen, it would be time to, you just have to be patient and wait till, quote, you see the market bottoming out. At this point, I don't see it bottoming out, but the pullback has already been at least 10% to 12%, which is what the average pullback is, you know, when we haven't had one in 6 years. So now the market is going back up for a few days, but we'll see how far it goes before it becomes volatile again and starts crashing.
And I'd heard that, you know, a couple of days ago when everything started happening, that that was the eighth worst day in the stock market's history.
Yeah, I don't really, you know, keep track of that, but for 2 days in a row, the market lost 500 points. And then all of a sudden, Wednesday, it goes up 600 points. I mean, that is a lot of money. They were saying that one day it lost at least $1 trillion, you know, the stock market, the value of all stocks computed. I mean, that's a lot of money for investors to lose.
Sure.
And that's what people feel in their pocketbooks.
Mm-hmm.
But the savings rate of Americans, if they have the money to do it, is tending to go up, and people just aren't letting loose with it, or, you know, buying clothes. They said they're not buying clothes anymore. So what are people buying? They're saying mainly people are buying cars and houses if they can afford it.
Right.
So those are very, you know, expensive items.
Yes.
And I just, you know, I feel that the price of gasoline, if it does continue to go lower, that that would only help, for the most part, the middle class. So I'm not for, you know, gas being sold at $5 a gallon, no. But I know it's not going to go back to 29 cents a gallon.
Right. Absolutely. And Neil, so for everything that you've experienced and you've learned, what who kind of helped you along the way? Who were some of your mentors?
Well, I have to say, you know, as a kid, I sort of liked, you know, J. Paul Getty was one. So I've read his biography. But the trader that helped me a lot was a guy named Ken Chow. That's C-H-O-W. He operates a thing called the Pacific Trading Academy. And he learned from a person that I have a lot of respect for called Larry Williams was his more or less trainer, but now he's out doing it on his own, trying to be a mentor. So I have to, you know, tip my hat to him. And then, you know, reading on my own about, you know, Charles Dow, you know, Wyckoff, Gann, and Elliott, those are also my idols. So I know the difference between, you know, their various trading methods. So I'd say he was the one, because what he explained to me was basically how trend lines move.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I like best about his method of teaching is that he didn't use indicators like advanced decline indicators, overbought or oversold indicators, or oscillators, or other things. So it was just straight up chart reading.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to, you know, keep these indicators in my head, or keep going back and seeing how they're moving. You know, at most, if I were to use a indicator, I'd use an index like the Dow Jones Industrial, which any direction that moves up or down, you know, 70% of the stocks, you know, move along with it.
Right.
So I find that to be very useful, because I like to go along with the trend. And like I said before, the things that I would use would probably be 200-day moving average versus the 50-day moving average, and take note of when they cross each other as being very significant in general of how the market is doing or where it is going.
Well, Neil, unfortunately, we are running out of time for today's episode. I do want to thank you for coming on today, and we'll have you back in 2 weeks.
Okay, I'll look forward to coming back.
All right, well, Neil Golden, thank you very much for coming on to the show today. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.